Alexander Mulder Gonzalez, voted UT's most active student in 2023. Motivated, an activist, having a voice in the world, raise awareness. On top of that, particularly interested in the energy transition. And she studies mechanical engineering at the University of Twente. Now, what is mechanical engineering?
With mechanical, it can literally go into anything that moves. And everyone, much potential in them. And if you really believe in something and want to change something, if you can always bring a project to life that will help people, it's about knowing who and why.
This is the Gen Z in STEM podcast. I'm your host, Mydrin, and I hope you're as excited as I am. Let's get to it.
So, hi.
Hello.
Welcome. So, today we're joined with Alexandra. So, could you maybe give an intro bit on your background, I guess, and where you're from?
Yes, I come from Chile. I was born in Paris, France, though. I lived there for 3 years. And my mom's from Chile and my dad's Dutch. So we moved to Chile and I lived there most of my life. Just did like a really small exchange here in the Netherlands when I was 14. And yeah, now I'm back in the Netherlands.
You're back here for mechanical engineering.
Yes.
So let's get into that.
Let's.
So, well, first of all, since you study mechanical engineering in second year.
Third year.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
So, well, you know even more, I guess.
Well.
So, what is mechanical engineering and what does the study consist of?
So, mechanical engineering pretty much looks at static and dynamic systems and looks at how they can work to do the function that they have to do and also have the structural integrity remaining. But it's quite a mix of like physics, math, but then a lot of things I also wasn't expecting, like a lot of material science and knowing how materials work and how much stress they can endure. And a lot also of like thermodynamics, fluid mechanics, heat transfer, which has a lot to do on energy, which I find specifically very, very interesting. And yeah, so there's the side of machine making, but also generating energy. So it's kind of a mix like that.
Okay. Yeah. There's like a lot of things that fall under this like mechanical engineering umbrella, I guess.
Yeah. But like then, everything that moves.
Everything that moves, damn. Very large.
Yeah.
And so then for all these like aspects, which one has been like your favorite?
My favorite and kind of also a reason why I started studying it is energy, making energy, looking at the energy transition and seeing how you can make systems very efficient and also optimizing those systems. So I remember in module 3 and module 2, we had to like analyze a power plant. And that for me was the most fun of all. Thinking like how can we take infinite natural resources like solar energy and optimize a system so that it can give so much to us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then what maybe about something that's a bit harder, like the harder parts of mechanical engineering to you?
I think the hardest part for me, also because I'm quite active outside of my studies, is to understand everything to its full extent. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, yeah, you can pass an exam, but that's not very representative of how much you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of the concepts we learned are super complex. And if you get to the bottom of it, it's like beautiful and amazing and you can work so well with it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the subjects I've literally been like passing grade because I have so many other things going on. And I think that's kind of hard to keep up while keeping the learning quality good. Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're not going to be like passionate about every single subtopic, especially in a bachelor where you're like, you know, exploring different aspects of a field and then you're going to specialize. So some of them,
just gonna some of them pass. You can just pass.
Yeah. And then you'll go more into energy.
True.
Definitely. Okay. And I will go into all your like activism and other things you partake in a tiny bit later. But first, I was quite curious because I was talking with my friends and how so mechanical engineering has like lots of different types of projects in it. So in civil engineering, it's what I do. For instance, when you're redeveloping like a city or you're doing a project, for instance, you have the basics, which are like, how is it constructed? What materials are you using? How are they sourced and so on? But then the extra consideration are the social aspects. And like, tiny difference and things you consider socially can have a huge impact on the scope of the project and the impact it has and difference it makes in the community. So I was curious, in mechanical engineering, in the projects you've like partaken in, how is like user needs considered in order to have an impact on communities or individuals targeted by a project?
Yeah, I think user needs are considered, but I would not say that they are a priority or really looked at in depth, at least in the project groups I've been in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I think you've done them before, like stakeholder analysis. Mm-hmm. For example, for the power plants, knowing where it's going to be and kind of the effect it's going to have on its people, the conflicts you may see arise and how to deal with that. But it's quite surface level. It's much more focused on the technical things. And then we also like manufacture products to produce at a mass scale. So then you have to think about how do you balance user experience, which is what industrial design engineering do a lot, and at the same time make it like doable to mass produce. So yeah, we did a project with ID, which was quite interesting, and they were thinking a lot about the user experience and da da da, and we were like, yeah, but that's not possible. Like, let's turn it back a notch. Like, that's not gonna happen. So yeah, it's I think we do look at it, but I think it'd be much interesting if we would look even more into it. But I also understand that a lot of the interest of people who study mechanical engineering, it's more on optimizing the system itself rather than thinking about the people that are going to use it. Yeah, because it's kind of backstage, like designing machines, designing power plants. It's not like designing a building or a park or, yeah.
Okay. Well, actually, I'd love to go a bit more in how, like, they vary, especially, like, yeah, like I said, I'm in civil engineering. It's, like, the foundations. But like you said, co-engineering is everything that moves. So like you backtrack to like create more efficiencies and things that have impact in society. So how is that process? And like, I guess, how do these projects create like, I guess, impact in society?
Yeah. So I think it's a lot about looking at, which I really like this part, like looking at the variables that you can change. So when looking at a system or at a project and you look at, okay, what can we actually change, and identifying all those variables and knowing the sweet spot where you can meet in between and see how that can get better. That's kind of how we do it. And a lot of these parameters are quite numerical. So I think when optimizing a system, sometimes it's hard to get the human factors in there because that's not very numerical. How do you optimize human organization or how we do projects for people and like by people? That's quite different. So I think that would also be quite interesting. Maybe other studies go into it more. But I think we definitely go more into things that you can quantify and how those systems can be optimized. So yeah.
And then you can like transfer to anything like, you know, like cars or machines or like really everything that moves in society.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can tell you one that I think was my favorite one. We did a power plant with kind of mirrors and then a solar tower. So it's not like solar panels, but it's a tower that gets super, super hot. And to store that heat, you use molten salt. And okay, with that heat, you can produce energy with turbines. But then the molten salt is still at a quite a high temperature, like 200 degrees Celsius. And then our project was kind of, okay, that salt we can then use to, desalinate water. So then it was like, okay, we are doing this power plant for the desert. So we had to kind of also mix the needs of the people. Yeah, they need energy, but they also need water. And how with the same system, you can satisfy different needs, which are also human needs. So I would say when optimizing a system, you do look at what is needed for humanity, but you maybe don't add them into the equation of how they can be optimized.
How people can be optimized. Yeah, definitely. No, and I love that because then like mechanical engineering seems also so essential to like so many parts of like society. And then it does ultimately have impact on people.
Yeah, a lot. Like if you are able to optimize a system to make it more sustainable, to give it to more people. Like, it has such a huge impact, mm-hmm. and it's in such a big scale. But that's the thing with mechanical. It's like, I would say, one of the broadest engineering fields, because you can literally go into anything that moves. And also static things, like building a bridge, that can also, a lot of mechanical engineers mm-hmm. can go in there. So it's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you can just find your niche on what do you want to contribute mm-hmm. to the world, to humans.
But then there's also other ways to have impact on people, which is, for instance, like your activism, because you don't just do mechanical engineering. You do many other things alongside that. So I want to go into like your activist journey. And can you maybe like elaborate how you discovered this passion for like activism and social change?
Yeah, I've been getting this question a lot recently, and it's been quite a journey to like look for that answer, because mm-hmm. I feel like so many things influence that path. Mm-hmm. But I think I grew up in a family which values social change quite a lot, which values people a lot. And yeah, with a big value of like, we come into this world and we're here to help each other. And that's what brings us value and fulfillment and love. So I think since a very young age, I was looking how I could help my peers, my family, and then it grew to my community. And then in high school, it started becoming more real that, okay, I can do something. I can really take initiative on things. And I kind of, fucked around and found out and realized that I have a lot of, and everyone honestly has so much potential in them. And if you really believe in something and want to change something, you can. You just put your heart into it. So then in high school, I started doing quite a few projects, also having to do with engineering, actually. Cool. It started more engineering than social. I can get into more of the specific projects later. But yeah, that's kind of how it went down.
Well, sure. Actually, yeah, let's get into it, because you did activism, well, both in Chile and then now in the Netherlands. So I guess, like, what different projects have you done, and maybe what are some key differences you've observed in the approach to activism behind the two countries?
Okay. Big question. So some projects I did in Chile, more related to engineering, was we had a really big pool in our school, mm-hmm. and it wasted, I think, 15,000 liters of water, like, I don't know in what time scale, but it would waste extreme amounts of water. Mm-hmm. And that would just go like out. And we thought about using all that water for our toilets mm-hmm. throughout our whole campus. We were a campus with 2,000 students, so it was quite big.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we were trying to optimize the system of seeing, okay, how can we reuse this chlorine water, make it suitable for bathrooms and pump it there. Mm-hmm. Sadly, it wasn't able to happen, but it did seem that like if they would implement it in 3 years, they would get their money back on the investment they made. And that's also when I saw how some institutions are all about greenwashing and actually don't care about the sustainability. They care about having that image. So that was quite a raw truth I learned at a younger age. But yeah, that was interesting. But then I also worked more with like social issues, people who had, yeah, really bad economic situations and were impaired to study because of that, mm-hmm. Like providing computers to them, providing learning materials to them, teaching them English, and also just being like a supportive person towards them, also with their families that, yeah, they couldn't really rely or find the ideal support in them. And then I also went more into my closer community. So mm-hmm. I think that's what changed a lot than coming to the Netherlands. Looking outside of your community and how you can help others, people that you're not directly connected to, but then learn to meet them and know what their needs are. Mm-hmm. And then kind of pivoting towards looking inside of your community and seeing how you can help. And that's something I've done much more in the Netherlands, of looking at like, what are the challenges our community faces? What are the conversations that are not being had and then I can help having? And yeah, what can be improved within our community? So I feel like in the Netherlands, it works more in your own bubble. And that's when, yeah, that's if you take the step of seeing like, how can I help the people I'm right next to and how can I help myself? That's a big question. And then in Chile, it's much more about how can I help people that are in like an extreme need of education, of economic resources, of a roof. Like, it's much different needs. So I feel like when you think you can always help, you can always start initiative, you can always bring a project to life that will help people. It's about knowing who and why and actually what are their needs and how am I suitable to help them with it.
So. Yeah, I love that. And I mean, I live in Argentina, Latin America, yeah. I guess, same region. And I think it's also like, okay, when you're in the, you have the opportunity to like help others, and also it's like enabled by your environment. So like, if you have like people, like kind of like you said, with like people who are thinking, okay, I guess this. Yeah, so there was multiple different like projects. Well, we didn't do as much as like helping with the pools, but we did do this project that had to do with waste farming from the cafeteria. Okay. That had to do with plastic and reusable plastics. So we were allowed to try this like pilot project where we could try to find a new system where, for instance, instead of having people be able to take like plastic waste into the like school for lunch, I guess, wherever they wanted to, we had pickup points where there was trays and then you could just like put them back in different parts of the school and then they would go back to the canteen, for instance, on just normal plates. It's tiny okay. little things, but it stopped quite a bit of waste that year. And it's like, things like that. Also, as kind of like you said, we had similar experiences. We had like communities close to where our school was that weren't as fortunate as us. So being able to like raise funds and be able to like donate it to help like build a tech center, that also helped them a lot. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also interesting how they're, the people that are in need are much closer to you. Like, we also had, like, one of the poorest neighborhoods was right next to our school.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, like, the polar opposites of how people live right next to each other. And here in the Netherlands, it's like, okay, people are helping others in, like, Africa. Like, and it's, yeah. No, and it's like, it's not a country, it's like the continent, you know? It's so far from them, what mm-hmm. they can do to help, which is also demotivating.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't see, like, how your projects have an effect on people directly, it's hard to stay motivated and also to for the effect to actually happen. Because if you're trying to make an impact in a country that you're not even in, most of the resources go into that process, mm-hmm. not really on actually giving the help. So I think that's a really big difference of like Latin countries, and maybe other third world countries to the Netherlands.
And then, of course, like you were saying, like maybe if you're in the same country and you're seeing this, it goes closer to your heart when you actually do the initiatives. So definitely how like the type of activism kind of shifts when you're like in the Netherlands and finding projects inside your community.
Yeah.
Changes it. But yeah.
Definitely.
And then so having the difference between these two like countries, did you see like different cultural and societal differences? And then how do you engage with them in your activism in those different countries?
I think activism in the Netherlands, it's a bit more kind of behind closed doors. And in Chile, it's kind of, if you want to help, you can, and you're welcome to, and mm-hmm. you're open. Like, there's plenty of help people need. And here was more like breaking those walls, starting the group, starting the conversation, finding people, inspiring people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that is a bit harder to be like the first one, not the first one, but like the forefront runner in your community or in your smaller groups. Mm-hmm. So that is a challenge, but it is also an opportunity. Because I feel like a big part of activism is finding where your passions lie
mm-hmm.
and even looking at the small things you can help doing. Because once you think that you have a voice and power
mm-hmm.
to help, like you can start very small. But as you did in your canteen, maybe you started like, okay, maybe we're going to tell them to use less plastic. And mm-hmm. then boom, you created a system that will eliminate like plastic waste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just thinking that you can and then going front with it. And maybe thinking that you can is easier in Chile because it's more accessible to help. Yeah. And here maybe it's like, okay, things are the way they are. People are doing quite well. Like there's not really much I can do. I kind of am bothered by several things, but, you know, we keep on moving rather than thinking like, no, this is an opportunity to grow, to learn, to build a community. And yeah, I think that's the biggest difference.
And I'd love to go to your journey here and where you've like pretty much founded Amnesty at UT. Then how do you find the strength to like break these barriers and like create something from, yeah, your initiative?
Oof, yeah. It was a very beautiful journey with a lot of community. I think that's such a building block of starting something. To be able to inspire others and letting yourself also get inspired by them. Because the fact that you begin something doesn't mean you're the sole one continuing it.
Yeah.
So that is quite beautiful. We started off, I joined the Let's Talk About Yes campaign with two other girls. They graduated, and then I recruited three of my very close friends now. And then we just started growing and seeing how, thinking back, we were thinking about such big projects at that time, which now have grown so much. But you find so much energy thinking together about something that you're passionate about. And creating social maps on how everything works and how you could influence different things and help people through a journey that you went on alone. That has been very beautiful. And to see how many people get impacted by it, it really is a driving force. And when things get tough, you need to remember why you're doing this. And that really has to come from the heart, not like from the ego or from the mind, but from the heart.
Okay. So fostering the community.
Fostering community and fostering purpose and knowing that you can do something, even if it's a huge problem. It's everything you can help with.
And okay, what would you say to like someone who like sees something in their community or like wants to create a difference and get more involved in topics like these and like be passionate about it, but they don't know where to start?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, you can start it. Like, no one's stopping you. You're the only one stopping yourself. Like, you can start it. We all are so unique and have so many talents and so many capabilities. You can definitely start, first of all. And then I think finding people and talking to people about it. Because not even finding people, sometimes if you just talk about it with your friends, with the people close to you, with the people you meet, you'll realize that the problem goes much beyond you. And thinking like, no, like, I don't think they will like it, or like cutting yourself short. You should be the last one rejecting yourself. So don't reject yourself. Don't think that others won't believe in you or won't believe in what you're trying to make. Just put it out into the world. Start talking. Start small. And try to create like social maps. And before just starting with one thing, which I think it's important to not wait a lot to start, because you can never get it right. You can never get the perfect project. But try to create like a social map. Try to see how one problem feeds into the other and how everything connects, and try to find the connectivity of things, because then your purpose becomes super clear. Your path becomes more clear, and your passion comes, and yeah, you can really inspire others, let them inspire you. And yeah, start small, dream big, and you can do it.
So it goes from the inside to out, like, you know, like, I love that, the like actually like analyzing situation. It's really like technical, you know, like, okay, let's identify the hotspots, and then we go into it, and then, you know, and then that way we change like the community.
Yeah, like it really overlaps. Like when I was thinking about coming to this podcast, you were also telling me I'm gonna ask you about your study. I started thinking a lot of things overlap with like having this love of optimizing a system and finding these little sweet spots and hot spots. With social change, it's also, it has similarities. And if you're able to find, yeah, these sweet spots where you can contribute, it's magical.
Okay. And I guess my last question is like, I guess what hopes do you have for the future, and what projects do you see yourself like embarking on?
The hopes for the future is that I stay strong. My community stays strong. I always have people around me that love me as they do now. And to continue knowing that my voice has weight and it can be used for good, and my energy as well. And something that I'm looking forward to is I've started my own organization now, which is growing into a flowering team, called the Consent Project. And it came after seeing the necessity of that we've never had the conversation around how to communicate consent, boundaries, but also our emotions, our feelings, our needs. And sometimes we're so disconnected from what we want, because we're too much in our heads of what other people want. And like those disbalances that happen really sometimes create, not great situations in our society. And I feel like once we have introspection and self-reflection to look at ourselves and look at how we make others feel as well, it can help so much. So now I'm trying to, set up the team, which is now going great, set up workshops to delve deeper into this discussion, and open a space for learning and reflection. So yeah, that's what I'm busy now with, and I'm really looking forward to what it will become. Getting very inspired of others talking about how it affects our personal lives is really, really interesting. So yeah, I'm super excited about that.
Super inspiring, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for coming today.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an honor. And thank you for creating this space for women to be able to talk about their experiences, their passions, and everything.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope that brought value to you. And just a little favor, the way we grow and then we get more guests for the podcast or for you is when you follow on YouTube, Spotify, and Instagram, as well as leaving a positive review on Spotify. So if this brings any value to you, and if you're excited for what's coming next, please consider doing those. Thank you. Bye.